Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Pop Culture Uncovered. I am Pete, filling in for our usual host, Armand, who has abandoned us, I guess. So it's just me and Belle. Belle, how are you doing right now?
Hi, I'm here. Some days that's the best.
Right.
Okay.
So we've got some pop culture news to sift through. Spider-Man universe is finding its way onto TV. We got some angry Swifties. And of course, we mourn one of the greatest voice actors of all time. So what do you want to jump into first, Belle?
Let's talk Silk.
Let's do.
So I don't know if you all heard, but Silk Spider Society live action TV series is headed to Amazon Prime Video. And if you're not familiar with Marvel Comics, Silk is Cindy Moon, who was a classmate of Peter Parker's. And I believe in the last Spider-Man movie, there was a cameo by the character. I don't know if the same actress would be playing her on the Prime Video series, but there was definitely a cameo. And Cindy has spider powers, and it's a spider totem, much like Peter and Gwen are, and Miles. But this gives me anxiety for several reasons. The first being that Sony just signed a deal with Netflix last year to have exclusive rights to their content, up to and including their part of the MCU. So why on earth is Silk, a character who's intrinsically tied to Peter Parker and Spider-Man, going to be on Amazon freaking Prime and not on Netflix?
It just seems like you're going to find a bigger audience on a streaming service that people expect to find you on. Yeah, I knew so very little about Silk and didn't even realize she got bitten by the same radioactive spider that Peter Parker did. And so they have that link there. What I do know is Into the Spider-Verse directors Phil Lord, Chris Miller are producing Silk. So that's got to be a vote of confidence, right? Is this how we're feeling?
I don't. No. So to your point, not a lot of people, I'm very protective of Cindy. She's actually one of my favorite characters. Uh-huh. And so for me, it's very stressful. Like on the one hand, Angela Kang is involved and she's great. And Lord and Miller are involved and they're great. But I'm just like, I have so much anxiety, especially knowing how badly, because again, we could have had Silk 2 years ago.
With Black Cat and Silver Sable, right? That was the
exactly, the
possible Regina Prince-Bythewood project
that
never came to be.
And if they hadn't kept playing games with her and she finally walked away from it, we could have had Old Guard and the Woman King visuals in the Spider-Verse. Mm-hmm. Y'all, can you imagine how good that would have been? Oh, just thinking about it makes me sad. Like what we could have had. So I am... On the one hand, I know Amazon Prime is going to give them all of their money. On the other hand, why are you making me support Amazon more than I need to as they lay off 10,000 workers while their CEO has billions of dollars? And on my foot, because I've run out of hand, I'm not comfortable with all of these spinoffs when we haven't wrapped up in a satisfying conclusion yet. Either Venom, Eddie Brock, or Peter Parker stories. And we've seen how well they do when they do something that's not one of those things. Hello, Morbius.
Yeah.
So now we have this. Now, granted, I feel a little bit better about this because it's going to be a TV series and not necessarily a movie. So there's a lot more room to breathe and do good character work, which is, let's be honest, the Sony Spider-Verse films are not, except for the Into the Spider-Verse movies, are not really known for their in-depth character work.
I mean, I've enjoyed them in sort of the same vein that I've enjoyed the MCU, because I do sort of think of the Spider-Man movies as essentially MCU movies. You know, it's
and now they are it's hard after to separate No Way them. Home.
Yeah. And so I have a lot of weird feelings. Spider-Man was one of those characters that was just like pure Spider-Man for a while. We had 2099 Spider-Man. I read some of those books. Ultimate Spider-Man, read some of those books. And I've always loved Miles Morales. Like, I forget that it's that this character, that Miles is as young a character as he is, as in, like, hasn't that character hasn't been around 20 years longer than he actually has. But I do feel like all of a sudden, kind of just very quietly, Spider-Man became like Green Lantern to me, in that when you get to the era where like all of these different colored rings show up and you've got like,
you mean blackest night, brightest day,
blackest night. You have, you know, avarice and love, and, you know, you've got the blue lanterns and the all the red lanterns, all these different lanterns. When that happened, when, you know, they finally were like, this is it. It feels like it does now, where you have all these different spider-powered superheroes and all of these villains coming out of, you know, Venom, Carnage, and there's like a million of them.
You really want me to give you the list? Because I will.
I kind of do, because I really thought I could run them off the top of my head. Hit me.
So the bad guys that came out of the thing are Venom, Eddie Brock, Anti-Venom.
Right. Oh, Anti-Venom.
Venom. Yep. Agent Venom. Mm-hmm. Carnage. Lady Carnage. who was the young lady who was in Venom, Let There Be Carnage, the one who basically was a mutant? Shriek. Those are just the spider-based ones that I could think of off the top of my head. Hero-wise, you have Peter Porker. You have Penny Parker, who is...
Right, love Penny Mary Parker. Jane,
and Pete's daughter. You have Gwen Stacy, you have Miles Morales, you have Miguel O'Hara, who is like Gwen and Peter's great 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 grandson, because he's Spider-Man in 2099. You great grandson. You have so Miguel O'Hara, you have Cindy Moon, you have Spider-Woman.
Right.
You have Spider-Woman. You have Jessica Drew. Yeah. So those are just the spider-themed people. That's not getting into his other characters, such as, which we're getting spinoff of, we're getting characters like Kraven the Hunter. And this is not how I want to Aaron Taylor Jones back into the MCU. I would much prefer us to get Quicksilver back, but okay.
you've been holding out for that for a while. I have been,
and I had some hope when Inhumans came out, because his actual canon wife was on the show. But that show was so terrible, except for Ian Ruhan, that I'm like, well, no, I don't want that either. And the girl they cast as Crystal was not a good actor. She was really bad, which is problematic, because one of the main reasons the show failed is because Crystal's supposed to be the heart of the Inhumans, and every time I saw her, I wanted to punch her in the face. And I wasn't the only person, and that's one of the main reasons, because Crystal is such a key part of the Inhumans, that if the actor is playing her made me go, shut up, you whiny bitch, or want to punch her in the face most of the time. That's a problem. So any hope of having Crystal and Quicksilver finally get together in live action went out the door with that. So Kraven the Hunter, and now Bad Bunny is playing El Murto. And I'm just like, and he's acted in what before? So there's a lot of stunt happening. And I could be wrong. Bad Bunny might be an amazing actor. He really might be.
I mean, you know, hip-hop artists becoming actors, especially in geek properties, has always kind of worked. Look, I even appreciated Sticky Fingers as Blade. So
that's true. You know. And he was, I actually really liked that show. For y'all youngins who don't remember, there was a Blade show on, I want to say, was it Cinemax?
I can't even remember.
And granted, you know, I keep thinking about how good Joey Badass was on Mr. Robot and how phenomenal he was. So I could be wrong. Bad Bunny might be a really good actor. But I just don't know. I have anxiety. Mm-hmm. I do not want characters I love. The way the way Ron feels about Peter Parker is how I feel about Cindy Moon and Jessica Drew. Mm-hmm. I'm very protective of them. I do not want them to be in terrible adaptations that are going to ruin those characters being used going forward.
I will say I'm always more hopeful about TV shows lately. We've talked a couple times about, you know, event fatigue, Marvel fatigue, and how, you know, that's, I feel like that has popped up again. And basically fans are like kind of tired of it. But I feel like the TV shows, Marvel and otherwise, you know, a lot of the TV shows that take the characters seriously, that are able to explore a lot more than a movie is able to. And with a character that a lot of people don't know as much, then you have an opportunity to actually learn about the character. Whereas in a movie, you have to wedge all of this backstory in, and I feel like it makes it a chore, because once you've got the backstory worked in, how much time do you really have for a plot? And I feel like it's been really smart, and it's been mostly Marvel, right? But a lot of the TV shows have introduced us to newer characters. And I felt like that's been the smartest way to introduce a character to me, because now I can spend some time with them, as opposed to having them wedged into a movie where we're not really ever going to get, you know, a satisfying story with that character at the center. At best, they'll be a character that's additional to something else. And we have to wait, you know, 3, 4, 5 movies down the road before we actually get to spend some time with that character and have some fun. And I think that's what's been enjoyable about a lot of TV shows, even the ones I haven't loved as much, is you still get more time. And so you really understand the character better. Yeah.
I agree. And I think that has been, but that also leads to a different problem. And I feel like we're going back to the same issue that we had with the Netflix MCU. If the show is good and we do fall in love with the character, what does that mean for that character's place in the main MCU?
Yeah.
Because we're just now getting Daredevil back. Who knows how long it's going to be before we get... We all thought we were going to get Jessica on She-Hulk, which would have made perfect sense because they're really good friends. Then those two and Carol Danvers are basically the three freaking musketeers, along with Nightwing Investigations, Colleen Wing, and Misty Knight. Those five characters are ride or die for each other. So we haven't gotten those characters together yet. We've had to wait almost 5 years to get Daredevil back and Kingpin back. So I don't want to go through this again. I don't want to fall in love with the character and then never see them again, or we have to wait 5 years before they're officially a part of the main continuity. And this feels like they're setting us up again, and it's very stressful. And I just don't know. I don't know, because after what happened with Netflix MCU and the Freeform MCU, I am very gun shy about any properties that don't officially come out on Disney Plus.
Yeah.
I am very stressed about it. I don't know if I can invest, because especially since a lot of the characters that have been introduced on Disney Plus have not been folded into the overall MCU except Jen Walters. And at the very last moment, Ms. Marvel. Mm-hmm. So again, it gives me anxiety. Don't make me fall in love with people and then I never see them again. Mm-hmm. And they don't interact with all the other characters. Does that make sense?
It does. I am at least excited to meet a new character, particularly one that, you know, does exist in the MCU, and to see, you know, the possibility of having her be introduced even further. Because I've seen my share of Spider-Man stuff, the animated series, the several animated series that have come out, the movies, with, you know, all three Spider-Men, have been really enjoyable. You know, Into the Spider-Verse was really enjoyable. I feel like I haven't really had a bad Spider-Man experience. And so to have another character that is in this universe or is the spider-powered character, I'm cautiously excited. But you were speaking about that fear of disappointment, anger, frustration. Those words describe the Swifties, who are really, really upset at Ticketmaster right now. And I,
as they should be.
As they should be. It just feels like, Belle, we're old, right? This is generational. Taylor Swift fans are really upset at Ticketmaster. And I'm like, why is Ticketmaster even still a thing? We've been mad at Ticketmaster since like Pearl Jam was having this conflict. Why are we still in this world where Ticketmaster, like a company that owns venues, a company that produces artists, a company that like basically is what a vertical monopoly. It owns and controls so many aspects of music entertainment that this entity is still with us, is still screwing customers over, and is still making people mad. How are we still talking about Ticketmaster?
I'm like, we've been talking about the nonsense with Ticketmaster since Pearl Jam was the canary in the coal mine, and mm-hmm. tried to tell us that they were gouging people for the money. And I think if you don't understand how the music industry works, even if you don't understand, you can understand that they have an unfair monopoly. Mm-hmm. But let me explain just like really quickly for those who don't know. Musical artists do not make money off of their albums. It's that simple. They don't make money off of streaming, or they make so little money off of streaming that it might as well not be money. They make their money through touring, and more importantly, they make their money through the merch sold on the tours. They make their money on those ticket sales mm-hmm. and on the merch sold on the tours. So Ticketmaster's monopoly was already bad, and then they merged with Live Nation, which was something that should have been shut down when it happened. That happened, I believe, in 2007. I would look it up. The merger then basically created this giant monopoly. And that's not even getting into the fact that scalpers are buying the tickets and now tripling or quadrupling the price. Tickets that should have been no more than $100 at most are going for $795 at the minimum. And I just saw $12,000 for one ticket. And guess who's getting that money? Not Taylor Swift, not her band, not her crew, not the people who are physically setting up the location, just Ticketmaster. And yeah. That is not okay.
Sorry, you have this whole system also, which, you know, having a verified fan system, which was a mechanism that they created that was, the idea was eliminating bots. You know, that giving pre-sale codes, you know, so that they want more control of the pre-sale codes. But then they also invented this sort of system where, like, okay, a certain number of tickets are going to be at this price, a certain number at this price, but there's a large number of tickets that they can choose to fluctuate based on demand, which in the case of Taylor Swift, you're looking at millions of tickets being sold in a single day. You know, Ticketmaster basically saying, like, this overwhelmed our website, the system that we had built in place, you know, to fight against bots, you know, was basically overwhelmed. And all of these things, you know, for any other company, I feel like, okay, it makes sense. You know, Taylor Swift's one of the biggest artists in the world. Her tickets go on sale. First time she's had a concert since 2018, since pre-pandemic. And, you know, there's a very retrospective, you know, feel to the series of concerts that are being produced. But none of that matters to me because this is Ticketmaster. Like, when you are the Coke or Pepsi, when you're Disney, when you're like, I don't care about your problems. I don't care about, like, you know, your system being overwhelmed, because you're one of the few companies in the world who have the resources to not be overwhelmed. And more importantly, like, you've made yourself a monopoly. You've directed all traffic to you. You've made yourself the one-stop shop. So there's no excuse when you are when you claim to be overwhelmed. You know, and I know that fans are basically saying, like, we feel completely gaslighted by, you know, Ticketmaster basically saying, like, oh, we didn't know this was going to happen. And I think it's entirely possible that Ticketmaster was overwhelmed, didn't anticipate these things correctly. But I don't have any sort of pity, because when you're the biggest show in town, when you've worked very hard to make yourself the only show in town, then you have to deliver. You have to deliver no matter what the demand is. And the thing that is frustrating to me is, I don't think the fact that we can count the number of artists on one hand who have actually spoken out against Ticketmaster's practices, their monopoly, and everything else, it just to me isn't good enough. You know, for Taylor Swift to not be speaking out right now on behalf of her fans, these are the most loyal fans, you know, some of the most loyal fans in all of music, you know.
For her to not, are like Barbies, are like the Beehive. They do not play around, and she needs to get out there and say something too. Part of that is because of the fact that Ticketmaster can control her fate. It's no point in being one of the most top-selling artists in the world if there's nowhere you can have a show because of places like Ticketmaster. Mm-hmm. And for 13 years, ever since they became merged with Live Nation, they have just destroyed smaller businesses, smaller venues. Smaller venues are not getting the traffic because of Ticketmaster. Smaller selling locations are not getting the traffic because of Ticketmaster. To go to your point, if you're going to make yourself a monopoly, then you have to deliver. Now, they've canceled general seating tickets altogether. So there's people who have literally, and it I'm not going to lie, it hurts my heart watching these kids on TikTok and on Instagram just burst into tears, especially after the last 2.5 years. I think we all want to be able to go out.
Right. We just want to go to a concert, man. That's all.
Right. Right. And to watch 15, 13, 20, 25-year-old kids basically be online for 24 hours to get tickets, and then at the last minute have the rug pulled out from under them, it's gross.
I'd say
we are a barrel of laughs tonight.
Right? Because the next thing we've got to talk about now is, you know what, I'm going to try to frame this in a way that is as the least sad I can possibly do it, which is to celebrate the fact that, you know, Kevin Conroy, who we lost this past week, was such, just changed the trajectory of one of our most beloved fictional characters of all time. In such an amazing way. And of course, that is Batman. There is just something, and we've talked about him numerous times on this podcast, something about that man and the way he personified one of the most beloved characters, one of the most famous, well-known characters of all time, and somehow breathed new and different life into this character that we've known for years and years and years. And he redefined Batman in a way that very few other people really have, whether they're writers, artists, or actors. Very few people have brought something to the Batman character to the degree that Kevin Conroy has.
This one, Kevin Conroy played Batman for 30 years.
Yeah.
That is just a remarkable achievement. And not only did he play Batman for 30 years, but he played him differently. One of the things that was such a gift of having him play the character, he is the only actor, live action, animation, period, who understood who Bruce Wayne was. And what I mean by that is, Conroy was the first actor to deploy 3 different voices for Bruce Wayne. He has played the voice. He played the Bruce Wayne voice, billionaire CEO and tech genius. He played the Brucey Wayne's voice, the man about town who had a different girl every night, kind of a genius ditz, who didn't know what was really going on, but he could really invent some great things. Not quite living up to the legacy that his parents left behind, but man, does he sure know how to invent some interesting gadgets. And Batman, Kevin Conroy was the only actor who not only was able to do that, but also understood in an intrinsic way why all of those things were the facets of the same man. They were not contradictory facets. They were part of the same person, and each one of them were armor for the little boy who saw his parents get murdered. And Kevin Conroy, to this day, is the only actor who understood that. And honestly, the only artist. I don't think any artist, whether it be comic book writers, whether it be the screenplay writers, whether it be directors or other actors, truly understood those three facets of what makes a Bruce Wayne an interesting character and why people keep coming back to him. I have talked multiple times on this podcast about why I can't read the books anymore and I don't enjoy the movies because they don't allow Bruce to change and grow. Kevin Conroy understood that change and growth and played it all the way to old man Bruce Wayne that we see in Batman Beyond.
Yep.
Who has lost his children, who watched Jason Todd die in his arms, who alienated Dick Grayson, who had a child with Talia al Ghul. All of that weathering that went down that got him there. We see that in Kevin Conroy's depiction of Bruce Wayne in Batman Beyond and in Batman, especially in Return of the Joker. Oh my gosh, if you haven't watched Return of the Joker, it is one of the best films and Batman films of all time. If you haven't watched it, you really should. As much as I love Bruce Greenwood's Batman, and I do, he does it. He has, again, hasn't been given the writing to play the three facets of the character. Conroy lost is heartbreaking, it is brutal, but I have to say, I am so happy that that man got to live his best life, got to be married to the man that he loved before he died, that he was able to live long enough to see Oberfeld sign into law, and that he was able to, in the final years of his life, live his life in his truth to the best of his ability. And he was a gift to everyone he met. Having met him personally at least twice, he was a joy. I don't think we're going to fully comprehend the loss for quite some time, but it has been a huge loss. And my thoughts, my prayers, my comfort goes to his family, to his husband, to his friends, Mark Hamill. They were such good friends. But Kevin Conroy was a delight. And if even one live action Batman comes to be even a tenth as good as he was, we might actually get a good live action Batman consistently. And that would be a miracle.
All of the different series and video games where he voiced Batman, it was like he found a new way to bring such such depth to the character, and he became the quintessential Batman. To me, the quintessential animated Batman is Batman the Animated Series, unless you count his roles in, you know, the DC Animated Universe with like the new Batman Adventures or Batman Beyond, because he's amazing in that, you know. And so the Justice League episodes, you know, the one-off movies.
I mean, he played him for 30 years over 60 different types of media.
And every time you heard his voice, it personified that character. And you're right, he did it in subtle and different ways, and he played every facet of Bruce Wayne, the character. I think one of the coolest things about Kevin Conroy is the fact that he received that renown, that love, that appreciation from Batman fans while he was with us. He was beloved from the first moment he started playing that character. And that's the thing that does make me happy going, you know, coming out of this. It does make me feel that I think is worth celebrating. He knew that we loved him in that role. He knew that he was, you know, he was our favorite. He knew that, you know, when everyone's like, well, who's the best Batman? Who's the worst Batman? That it's like, well, if you don't count Kevin Conroy, the best Batman is so-and-so. Like, whoever your favorite Batman is, your favorite live
action. Don't compare.
Right. Everyone's favorite live action Batman is still their number two Batman. Because number one, I think for most of us, is always Kevin Conroy and will always be.
But I cannot thank him enough for being so much a part of my life for 30 years. That is insane when I think about it. 30 years.
It's been a journey tonight. I want to thank you, Belle, for hanging out with me, for talking. Oh, man.
And we actually did a Patreon podcast about all of the Batman. We actually did a deep dive on each Batman and their pluses and their minuses. So if you want to be a patron and check out that, you can pledge to us as much or as little as possible. We will take even a dollar. That helps us to continue to put out great content for you. Like Armand's incredibly moving review of Wakanda Forever. And anybody who listens to this podcast knows damn well Armand did not want to see that movie. And yet he did and came out of it just rocked and wrecked in the best ways possible. So you should definitely read that review. You should check out the Eric Mitchell and I. We'll have our deep dive into Lord of the Rings, Rings of Power, going up on YouTube this weekend. You should definitely check out also Eric's deep dives into Star Wars, The High Republic, before the new shows start and the new seasons of our respective shows start. And of course, Pete is going to eventually give us his full rundown on Andor. And I fully expect him to go all the way in for good and bad. I don't know that there's anything bad about it.
I can't think of the bad part yet, but I'll get there.
That show is genuinely, like, it might be the most perfect of the Disney Plus Star Wars shows, period, in all honesty. But for all of that, please stay tuned to us at PC Uncovered on Twitter, Instagram, PopCultureUncovered.com, and Pop Culture Uncovered on Facebook, Patreon, and Tumblr. We will be here, and if you haven't checked us out, Armand will be doing a live hosting of the Black Excellence Book Club in DC very shortly, so tune in for that as well. And we will be doing more podcasts with Sankofa, and we might start doing little reviews of music and beer. Not necessarily in that order. So, you know, if you want to check those out, let us know.
All right. Well, thanks for joining me, Belle, and we will be back.